Amazon.
Part 1.
If you observe the Earth from the space, you may not find all natural features that you studied in geography books, such as mountains, lakes, rivers, plains, etc. They don't look like the same as you imagined. You can't see the Mount Everest from that large distance, but there are features that can be seen easily from the space, like the Amazon River. The Amazon River is approximately 6,500 to 6,800 kilometers long and has an average discharge of about 215,000 to 230,000 cubed per second. The Amazon River sets the record in terms of the sheer volume of water. It is the largest rainforest ecosystem in the world. The jungles surrounding the Amazon River are considered the lungs of the planet. It is home to numerous different species. There are thousands of distinct creatures in the Amazon, and you can find everything there. There is also a large company that has been active for 25 years in Seattle, US, where you can find everything you need except houses, cars, cigarettes, and predatory animals. These are actually Jeff Bezos's red lines. He's the founder and CEO of Amazon, who had big dreams since he was a primary school student. He's one of the richest men in the world. In the 70s, when he was a primary school student, he wrote an essay and mentioned his dreams. Bezos stressed that Earth is the most precious planet and thought about moving off this planet. He thought of a gigantic ship that could be home to people. In that time, Bezos just wrote his dreams. But now he thinks seriously about that project. Jeff Bezos unveils his grand space plans in his conferences. He talks about his plan for colonizing the space. According to many, this plan is not practical and seems funny to them. It is as funny as one person became the richest person on Earth by selling his books. Jeff Bezos did the same thing and now owns the largest retail store in the world. In the beginning, he just sold books and nothing else.
Amazon.com, this virtual shop claims to be the world's largest bookstore.
Here's my computer. Amazon.com up on the screen.
For many decades, bookstores did not pay attention to technological advances and the fundamental changes, and only used to sell books. They dealt with the return of the books and small sizes of the warehouses. People were also used to buy books in large cities. Bezos graduated from Princeton University in 1986 with degrees in electrical engineering and computer science. He worked on Wall Street in a variety of related fields afterwards. Then he thought about selling books online. He later said in an interview that when he realized in 1994 that the use of the internet had grown 23 times compared to the previous year, it was a better idea to invest in this industry. Most of the people didn't see this type of data useful at all. 2 years later, he sold the first book online.
We all know that a communications revolution is underway in this country.
What is the internet?
It's sort of the mother of all networks.
It's information highways.
It's kind of like your remote control to the world.
I came across the startling statistic that web usage was growing at 2,300% a year. So I decided I would try and find a business plan that made sense in the context of that growth. And I picked books as the first best product to sell online.
Soon, publishers and libraries welcomed Amazon's activities and started to sell and buy books online. Then, Amazon revenue increased day by day. In 1996, Amazon grew its revenue to $16 million. This company was founded with an investment of $300,000 by Jeff Bezos' Cuban stepfather. Net sales for fiscal 1997 were $147.8 million, an 838% increase over net sales of $15.7 million reported for fiscal 1996. This year, Amazon's book warehouses were the size of six football fields. At that time, people realized that a giant had stepped into the world of information technology. Jeff Bezos used a very simple method to earn money. He found an easy way to sell books. He owned large book warehouses. Amazon started to ask for small discounts from publishers to have the books, and then sell them online. It didn't matter to Bezos where you lived. Wherever a person had access to the internet, there was a branch of Amazon and the book would reach him in the shortest possible time. Customers used to buy these books cheaper than other stores. The number of Amazon users increased for the same reason. Amazon served over 17 million customer accounts. Customers also used to buy DVDs and musical instruments as well. In fact, Bezos used the book as a drug. People in all around the world were addicted to Amazon and its books, and Bezos tried to come up with new items in his company. He used to tell his employees that this is just the beginning. In the beginning of the 21st century, Bezos began selling more products on Amazon. Amazon started to suggest new products to customers every time. Considering all these products, books were the most important products for people in that time. Amazon's revenue reached more than $2.7 billion in the first year of the new century. In the following year, Amazon's revenue exceeded $3 billion. There were more than 20 million customers. Amazon moved its warehouses to other cities around the world. In this way, customers received their products in the shortest time.
Amazon could soon become the Walmart of the internet.
There were thousands of businesses eager to sell online. Bezos offered them a way to do it.
Amazon is transforming itself from an online bookstore to an online mall.
He transformed Amazon into a retail platform where anyone could sell their goods to his customers and invited thousands of other businesses to be a part of it.
It's the easiest place for anybody, small or large, who wants to set up shop online, to sell online, because they can access our 12 million plus customers. Anybody, all comers.
In 2003, Amazon launched Search Inside the Book. Users were allowed to search for the desired term in a book without purchasing it. Publishers cautiously agreed that Amazon would scan some books and turn them into searchable text. In fact, Bezos was promoting the digital book industry at that time. In that time, Apple controlled the music market with iPad and iTunes, and Bezos didn't want to lose his control over the book market. A year later, Bezos set up a lab in Silicon Valley. He asked his researchers to build a device to read digital books. In this laboratory, he said to the project officials, you must develop a strategy in such a way that everyone who sells books in physical form will no longer have a job. It seemed that Bezos wanted to destroy himself. At the end of 2007, Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos unveiled Kindle DX in New York. It was a simple and light device that could store 200 books downloaded from Amazon with a significant improvement compared to previous models. Bezos announced that the price of best-selling and new books would be $9.99 regardless of volume and quality. Bezos was inspired by the sale of 99-cent Apple songs on iTunes. The unveiling of Kindle DX once again attracted attention to Amazon. This showed that Bezos was very forward-thinking. Bezos was able to increase Amazon's revenue to about $15 billion in 2007. After almost 25 years since the establishment of Amazon, the income has reached $300 billion. This made Bezos the richest person on Earth with a fortune of $185 billion, higher than Bill Gates and Elon Musk. Bezos still keeps his old things in a corner of his office in Seattle to remember where he started and where he ended up. Now he has more than 580,000 employees all over the world. Amazon plays an important role in the employment of people in the United States of America. He has made the Amazon very similar to the Amazon River. And now for many of the 310 million users of this site, it is unimaginable to live a day without Amazon. However, if we travel to the Amazon forests, maybe our opinion will change completely. What we see from a distance is very different from the reality of Amazon. Barnes & Noble was the largest bookstore in the United States for many years. This bookstore, which started in 1886 in New York, now has nearly 627 retail stores across the United States. This bookstore is one of the most important competitors that was pushed out of the book market by Amazon, and now has to close several of its stores every year. Maybe the fate of this bookstore is the same fate as the Borders bookstore, which finally surrendered in 2011 after 32 years of experience and declared bankruptcy. Another 1,000 small bookstores filed for bankruptcy between 2000 and 2007. Now, Amazon's share of the printed book market is about 50%, and this share in the ebook market is about 75%. But the question is, how could Amazon bring such a disaster to traditional bookstores and publishers in less than a decade after its establishment?
More than 10,000 employees will lose their jobs as a result.
Getting the news today, it's upsetting. We tried. We tried. We gave it our best.
When Bezos started selling books online in the 90s, bookstores had been operating in the old way for almost 100 years. In this old way, publishers were paid very late and had to collect the returned books. They didn't have enough information about their customers. Bookstores acted instinctively. Amazon's sales method quickly attracted the attention of publishers. Publishers preferred to hand over the books to Amazon to sell them at a discount.
My present concern, though, is that Amazon, by selling what are called front list ebooks, that is the books that are in most demand, by selling them below cost, are creating artificial incentives for people to move from physical books to ebooks. And I don't think that that's right.
The strange growth of Amazon and the profit that publishers received made them dependent on this company. Every time a book was introduced on Amazon, thousands of purchase requests were registered. Selling books became prosperous. Many believed that if Amazon had not been established, perhaps the book printing and book selling industry would have been disappeared by now.
Amazon was very important to the success of my book. I know that they do a lot of internal marketing efforts. They're able to tell what kinds of books people like, and therefore when they recommend a book to one of their customers, it's based on previous purchases and previous kinds of books that that person has read. So I do think that that really helped to get my book in front of potential readers.
When publishers became more dependent on Amazon, it was Bezos' turn to change Amazon's structure. Bezos believes that the whole market should be for himself alone. This means the maximum reduction in prices. So Amazon announced that from then on, publishers should give more discounts to Amazon, which reached up to 50% of the price of the back cover of the book. Bezos' decision greatly reduced publishers' profits. On the other hand, if a publisher like Macmillan rejected this offer, Amazon would remove the purchase option for this publisher's books, or customers wouldn't be able to see Macmillan's books on the front page of Amazon's website, which actually meant the destruction of publishers. Another important event in the new century was the change of Amazon's algorithms. Earlier, the editors and content producers recommended the books and reviewed them. But since 2000, it was the personalization algorithm that determined which books to recommend to whom. It was based on previous purchases and Amazon's knowledge of the customers. Then, if Amazon were to introduce a book, publishers would have to pay $10,000. According to Amazon's contract and confidentiality policies, it will never be known what effect these ads would have on sales. Kindle DX wireless reading device worsened the situation for the publishers.
A diverse range of programs. Youth, spirituality, culture, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions, politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The limelight.
The Israeli occupation forces' deliberate targeting of journalists is still ongoing as the death toll of media personnel rises to 126. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, journalists continue to be a target of the Zionist regime's ongoing assault on the Gaza Strip, with two more reporters killed recently. Two more Palestinian journalists have been killed in Israeli regime airstrikes in the besieged Gaza Strip, increasing the death toll to 126 since October 7th, according to the government media office. The two reporters have been identified as Ala Hassan Al-Hams and Anqam Ahmad Adwan of the local SND news agency and Libya's February channel, respectively. The government media office said the death toll of journalists increased to 126. They were killed in an Israeli regime bombardment in Rafah and Jabalia cities recently, without providing any further details by the media office. Last month, the office of the ICC's chief prosecutor, Karim Khan, confirmed to Reporters Without Borders, RSF, that crimes against journalists are included in its ongoing investigation into the situation in Palestine. This follows the two last complaints filed by the Paris-based RSF with the International Criminal Court, the first on October 31st and the second on December 22nd, which called on the prosecutor to investigate all Palestinian journalists killed by the Israeli regime army. RSF said that Khan's office stated for the first time that crimes against journalists were included in its investigation. The statement assured the RSF that crimes against journalists are being examined by the prosecutor's office, among other potential crimes, as part of the ongoing investigation into the situation in Palestine, and RSF's objectives and actions must be supported and are of crucial importance in Gaza and elsewhere. It added that journalists are protected by international humanitarian law and the Rome Statute and must not, under any circumstances, be targeted in the exercise of their important mission. According to Gaza's Ministry of Health, 28,340 Palestinians have been martyred and 67,984 wounded in the Zionist regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza starting on October 7th. Moreover, at least 8,000 people are unaccounted for, presumed dead under the rubble of their homes throughout the Gaza Strip. Palestinian and international organizations say the majority of those murdered or wounded are women and children. The Israeli regime aggression has also resulted in the forceful displacement of nearly 2 million people from all of the Gaza Strip, with the vast majority of the displaced forced into the densely crowded southern city of Rafah near the border with Egypt in what has become Palestine's largest mass exodus since 1948 Nakba. Meanwhile, Al-Mayadeen English reported the government media office in Gaza reported that the number of Palestinian journalists killed since the beginning of the genocidal war against Palestinians in Gaza has reached 126 with the recent killing of two female journalists. Ala Hassan Al-Hams, a journalist with SND agency and other media outlets, and Anqam Ahmad Adwan, a journalist from Libya's February channel, were both martyred due to the continuous Israeli regime bombardment and targeting of civilian homes in Rafah and Jabalia areas. Al-Hams succumbed to the injured she sustained in Israeli regime airstrikes on Rafah. In the previous month, an Israeli regime strike resulted in the killing of 11 members of her family, and she suffered a spinal fracture. During the recent airstrike, both she and her unborn child were martyred, along with the remaining members of her family. Al-Mayyad in English added, it is worth noting that the head of the Sana'a negotiating delegation and spokesperson for the Ansarullah movement, Muhammad Abdul Salam, expressed condolences for the martyrdom of journalist Al-Hams, stating, our condolences to the remaining family and relatives of the journalist Ala Al-Hams, who was murdered in Rafah City. He reiterated his condemnation and denunciation of the ongoing Israeli regime aggression on the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, journalist Anqam Adwan was residing in Libya and worked in several institutions and media channels. She had recently returned to the Gaza Strip and was murdered as a result of the airstrike carried out by Israeli regime occupation on her home. Although Palestinian and international media repeatedly warned against the Israeli regime army targeting media crews and called for their protection, the occupation never responded to those calls and continued to target journalists as part of its attempts to obscure the facts, hide the picture, and prevent the documentation of the massacres it continues to commit in its ongoing aggression. The government media office in Gaza reported that the Israeli occupation military is once again engaging in incitement to continue the assassination of Palestinian journalists and attempting to justify its crimes. In a press release, the office said the Israeli occupation military occasionally issues inciting publications against various media outlets and Palestinian journalists, attempting to market false narratives as a prelude to assassinating or killing them, as well as justifying its crimes and obscure the Palestinian narrative. It pointed out that this has been repeated dozens of times since the start of the genocidal war against Palestinians. According to the statement, the Israeli occupation publishes photos and videos of journalists and photographers as if condemning them, but it selectively extracts them from reports they have prepared and previously broadcasted on television channels and through social media as part of their daily field journalistic work, the office noted. We have issued previous statements and declarations clarifying that the occupation engages in incitement against various Palestinian sectors and employees in diverse fields. This includes incitement against the health sector, hospitals, doctors, and as well as mosques, schools, universities, and many other sectors, it added. The statement emphasized that the occupation's aim of this incitement is to try to justify its targeting of all Palestinian sectors and the killing of doctors, teachers, journalists, and others who have been explicitly targeted. The government media office in Gaza held the Israeli occupation fully responsible for the lives of the Palestinian people, warning the world against the occupation's targeting of journalists, doctors, teachers, civil defense personnel, and all the categories of Palestinian society. It also called on all free world countries to pressure the occupation to stop the genocidal war it is waging against civilians, children, women, and all the categories of the Palestinian society.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is Hussein Latifi and you're listening to your program For Humanity from IRIB English Radio. In this program we talk about the concept of human being in the Holy Quran and different dimensions of the human soul according to the verses of the Holy Quran and the teachings of Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam. And in the previous episode, we talked about the intellect and the desire, base desire, hawa. We said in order to understand reason, we have to understand the opposite concepts. And one of the opposite concepts is hawa, the base desire. And we said there's a beautiful analogy, especially in the school of Ahlul Bayt, alayhumus salam, between the prophets and the intellect. The prophets are outward intellect, meaning that they lead people towards success, like the way a rational person, a person who uses his intellect, balances his desires in order to achieve some achievement and gain and success in life. Now, we said that like the way sometimes the message of prophet, divine prophets, are taken down by wrongdoers in their nations, in their people, among the people that the prophets are preaching, there are people who actually take down the message of the prophet. It's true also the message of reason is sometimes remains unheard within a human soul. Like, for example, for people who follow their desires, they don't listen to the advice of their intellect telling them this is not the right decision, this is not the right path. And the person knows that. You have some people that some addicted, you see some of these people who have fallen into the trap, I don't know, to the drugs and bad habits. If you talk to them, they actually accept that this is not the right path, but they can't do anything about it. So you see, the reason, the intellect that they have is already in the prison, actually functioning well in the theoretical level, that he understands that this is wrong, but it's dysfunction, it's not functioning in the leading. He cannot lead. I mean, the intellect cannot lead the person towards the right decision. So this is actually true in some outward intellect, which is the prophets. Sometimes they are restricted by hawa. They have been imprisoned. They have been killed, according to the verses of the Holy Quran. كُلَّمَا جَاءَهُمْ رَسُولٌ بِمَا لَا تَهْوَى أَنفُسُهُمْ. Because the prophets, the message of the prophet was against the desires that they had, they would kill the divine prophets. Or for example, addressing the prophet of Islam, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, Quran says, فَإِنْ لَمْ يَسْتَجِبُوا لَكَ فَعْلَمْ أَنَّمَا يَتَّبِعُونَ أَهْوَاهُمْ. If they don't listen to you, know that they don't listen to you because they are following their desires. Now, it's not that because they have theoretical doubts. Yes, for a certain level, at a certain level, at the beginning, people might have doubts, for example. But once the doubts are completely answered, and Quran says, يَعْرِفُونَهُمْ كَمَا يَعْرِفُونَ أَبْنَاهُمْ. They knew, like the way they knew their own children, that this is the divine prophet of Akhir al-Zaman, the end of times. This is the final, because they had some of the ulama of Banu Israel, some of the scholars of Banu Israel, because they had sources, they had descriptions in their books, and they knew it, that يَعْرِفُونَهُمْ كَمَا يَعْرِفُونَ أَبْنَاهُمْ, Quran says. They didn't have theoretical doubts, but the problem was that they would see that their own position, social position, would be endangered if they follow this prophet. And it was not theoretical doubt, it was practical desire that stopped them from accepting the truth. We will have a break and we come back to continue the discussion.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. This is Hossein Latifi, and you're listening to a program for humanity from IRIB English Radio. In the first segment, we were saying that divine prophets are functioning like the reason and intellect in their societies and in their communities, and exactly like the way that sometimes the voice and the message of the intellect is taken down by desires within one individual. It is also true that the message of the prophets in society and community are taken down by wrongdoers, by those who follow the desires. And Quran says sometimes when people reject the message of Anbiya, it's not out of theoretical questions that they have, it's the practical desires. فَأَلَّمْ يَسْتَجِيبُ لَكَ If they don't answer to your call, فَعْلَمْ Know that إِنَّمَا يَتَّبُونَ Only, it is only, it doesn't have any other reason. إِنَّمَا يَتَّبُونَ أَهْوَاءَهُمْ They only follow their own desires. Sometimes it's also possible that a person follows the desires of others, unfortunately. And repeatedly in the verses of the Holy Quran, we have this addressed to different divine prophets. Do not follow the desire of people. And why is that? Because maybe that some prophets had in their calculation that if they listen sometimes to, for example, make some compromise, let's say that, then those people would follow the right religion. And well, there are different theological stances on it. In Shia Kalam, we believe that even the thought and such calculation doesn't come to the mind of a divine prophet, and because of the infallibility. And these verses are إِيَّاكَ أَعْنِي وَاسْمَعِي يَا جَارَ in Arabic, they say that these are addressed to the prophet, but the real addressee of the thing is not the prophet, but other people who want to follow the path of the prophet. For example, you have two kids. One of them is trying to mess with the, I don't know, a glass of water on the table. Then the other one does not have this in mind at all, but you want to warn the other kid indirectly, or even your husband, your spouse, you want to, for example, warn the kid. You address your spouse and you say, okay, do not mess with that glass of water. Do not play with it. And if you do that, I will do this, for example. So that the kid that is listening present, he knows that this is the red line, for example. So this is also true with some of the addresses of the Holy Quran towards the Prophet. The Prophet never even think about certain things. لَإِنْ أَشْرَكْتَ لَيَحْبِطَنَّ عَمَلُكَ For example, if you attribute partners to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, even some other like lower ranking believers wouldn't do that. So why Quran does that is to give clear warning, but indirect, to other Muslims. So this is also true that, for example, in this verse that we have, لا تتبع أهواءهم, in different verses, do not follow the desire of others. It is because Quran and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala knows that some believers would have this calculation that if they make a compromise, then, for example, they can make the other people lenient toward their religion. It says, no, do not. You could have decent and proper etiquette with them, but do not make compromise in the religion of Allah. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala help us to know the true teachings of Islam. Thank you very much for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
صلى الله على محمد صلى الله على النبي صلى الله على محمد وعلى آل النبي صلى الله على محمد صلى الله على النبي صلى الله على محمد وعلى آل النبي
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
One of the most profound awakenings for Westerners since the launch of the Palestinian resistance operation Al-Aqsa Storm has been their understanding of how influential the Zionist lobby is. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted, the Zionist lobby, which works in line with the U.S. State Department when it can and independently and subversively when it cannot, tends to influence major arenas of societal interest. On the surface level, one can simply follow the money and understand the phenomenon. The Israeli lobby pouring millions of dollars into buying U.S. politicians. Zionist hate groups unleashed to stifle pro-Palestinian students on college campuses. Celebrities and artists flown out to Israel to pose with Israeli occupation soldiers in order to paint them in a positive light. However, more devious and subversive groups exist within American society, specifically designed to normalize the concept of not only an Israeli regime, but the imperialist settler ideology of Zionism. These organizations are designed with the American left in mind. Using left-wing, pro-worker sloganism, Zionist groups specifically target left-wing movements, students, and youths in order to indoctrinate them into aligning with the Zionist cause. One of these groups is known as Habonim Dror. Habonim Dror is believed to have promoted the ideas of social justice and peace while running six Zionist student camps across North America. The group actively recruits young Jewish students from across the United States and Canada, though they have more minor concentrations in New Zealand, Brazil, the UK, and other countries, indoctrinating them in their camps and even including a year-long program to send them to occupied Palestine. At first glance, at their website and mission, it is clear that they are intent on separating themselves from the ruling Benjamin Netanyahu regime in Tel Aviv. Habonim Dror emphasizes the need for labor Zionism and even goes as far as suggesting ending the occupation, but ultimately succumbs to the same old two-state solution rhetoric that forces Palestinians to deal with an aggressive, genocidal, and brutal neighbor. Labor Zionism, which can save you a few syllables if you just call it what it is, Zionism, was a mutated appeal to the labor movement in North America. Habonim Dror was established in 1930s as an appendage faction of the mainstream Zionist movement, and it has until now taken a backseat role in picking up Jewish youth who at first were resistant to the idea of Zionism. For decades, the Israeli occupation has enjoyed total control of its image, and so its initiatives were less aggressive. Now, Habonim Dror represents a wave of Zionism meant to capture what would be dissenting Jewish voices and reprogram them to be tools for colonialism and imperialism. Its mission is designed to meet the moment of a resurgent left-wing movement in the United States, particularly after the Occupy Wall Street movement of 2011, the Bernie Sanders presidential run in 2016, and the George Floyd uprising of 2020, all three of which propelled left-wing movements and revived an interest in socialism in an otherwise deeply reactionary society. Habonim Dror may use veils like socialism and progressivism to define itself. However, its principles mention nothing of anti-imperialism and anti-colonialism. The group socialism is a national socialism for its own fascist occupation. It is not rooted in internationalism or global worker solidarity. It is a corrupted socialism that uses sloganeering and symbolism that are aesthetic to socialism while driving a deeply reactionary and imperialist political line. Habonim Dror encourages its members, who can join as early as high school, to participate in local social justice issues, including police brutality, immigration reform, climate change, and other popular left-wing issues that have gained much attention in American society. It further trains participants to be, according to their website, leaders, changemakers, and activists in their communities, offering attractive scholarships, opportunities to travel to occupied Palestine, a rich network of connections that could offer promising careers, and formal leadership training programs. Habonim Dror seems similar to a fraternity or an innocent summer camp. However, it is adamantly dedicated to the Zionist cause, which demands the existence of Israel. It is a simple equation. Habonim Dror targets what would otherwise be neutral, uninterested, or otherwise hostile Jewish youth and codifies a left-wing Zionism in them, then encourages them to embed themselves into their communities and local movements as leaders and changemakers. They represent the face of Zionism, where Zionism would otherwise be unwelcome, and thus rebrand Zionism through a false definition. These initiatives are crafted to normalize collaboration with more hardline Zionists by infiltrating otherwise progressive movements. Labor Zionism agents can influence those around them to embrace Zionism and Israeli occupation. Zionists know that principled left-wing movements outright reject their racist ideology. In order to adapt, groups like Habonim Dror have been crafted to mutate Zionism in order to appeal to a left-wing wave that does not have strong principles of anti-imperialism and anti-colonialism. The Palestinian issue is purposely framed as complicated and sensitive in American society. Left-wing Zionists can then be deployed to command the conversation in progressive circles, rejecting any idea of a true liberation for Palestinians. As long as Zionism itself is not seen as the main issue, the Israeli occupation is framed in a positive light. A prime example of the type of influencer Habonim Dror seeks to create is the aggressively Zionist and Islamophobic actor, Sacha Baron Cohen. Cohen joined the group in his late teens in 1980s, attending summer camps and ultimately moving to the occupied Palestinian territories for a year, working alongside other Zionist youth. Later, he would play the roles of deeply racist caricatures that fueled the fire of Islamophobia at the height of post-9/11 hysteria in the United States. Cohen now spends his time as a critic of the U.S. right-wing lobby, while simultaneously spreading Zionist propaganda and continuing his racism against Muslims. He came out in fierce defense of the Israeli response to the Palestinian resistance operation Al-Aqsa Flood. Clearly, even Labor Zionism falls short of condemning the occupation, despite its insistence that it does. Habonim Dror isn't the only Zionist youth group seeking to build a generation of Zionist influencers and activists. there are many different Zionist youth groups, some that are more left-wing in nature and others that are hardline. Careful attention must be paid in order to understand how Zionists can subvert movements, organizations, and ideas, especially by weaponizing progressivism when a progressive movement is beginning to take shape and action. Let it be clear. There is nothing progressive or left-wing about the Israeli occupation or Zionism. At its core, it will always be a racist, colonial ideology that threatens war, expansionism, and exploitation. No rebrand can ever take away these core features of Zionism.
The safe pass to our thoughts.
Hatta Fatima was born in 1948. This was the year Palestinians refer to as Al-Nakba, the catastrophe, when Israel wiped the Palestinian inhabitants from 400 villages. Some they entirely destroyed. Others were repopulated with Jewish immigrants. Hatta Fatima was born in a field while her father fought in the war. Within days of her birth, her family fled to Beit Anan in the West Bank, which is where she has remained her entire life.
First of all, this is my land and my country. It is not only the 1948 or 1967 borders from the sea to the river, 27,000 square kilometers. I am not ready to let go of a centimeter. This is historical Palestine.
Al-Quds.
Jerusalem, the most important one, the capital. This is Bab al-Shams and this is Bab al-Karameh. The Jordan Valley has been conquered and taken over by the Israelis. Here is Jenin. We will never let go of this area. And north is the Galilee, now ruled by Israel. My mother brought me into this world on the 14th of July 1948, the day of the Nakba. I was born in a field and left for 24 hours while my father fought in the war. I now fight with my words. Although this is my only weapon, I'm strong because I'm right.
Since her exile, Hatta Fatima has witnessed dramatic changes in the landscape surrounding her home, from the construction of the Israeli wall, which eventually encircled her home, to the gradual building of Israeli settlements, which engulfed what was once Palestinian agricultural land. Her town was once considered the safest path to walk to the holy city of Jerusalem, Al-Quds.
The last time I visited Jerusalem, Al-Quds, was 7 years ago. But it is now forbidden by the Israelis. They forbid me from everything that I hold dear to me, praying in Al-Aqsa Mosque, buying sweet cakes from the old markets of Jerusalem, and walking through the ancient path of the old city. There is no place more beautiful than Jerusalem. I would love to be there just to see the markets, the shops, the old streets, and to pray in Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Thank you.
Karama.
Bab al-Karama was built because it is the western entrance for Jerusalem. It is near Jerusalem, and this is why we built this village and named it Karama. It means our pride.
Hadi Fatima described the land to me, stating, "The land is our bed and the blankets our sky." Palestine to Hadi Fatima is not exclusively about the land itself, but the Palestinians' relationship to their land. She told me that people can and will continue to live from the land, and only when their livelihood is taken, that will be the end of Palestine. Fatima sews each village and city into the map of Palestine, without borders, without boundaries, without settlements, without Israeli cities, and without the infamous wall built by Israel to separate what is now called Israel to the West Bank.
We want peace and they want peace. Our weapons is the rock and words. But we are rightful people. This is our land. Our ancestors are from here. Since 1968, they have been excavating tunnels, found a trace of evidence or antiquities. All of these antiquities are Arab, Muslim, Christian. We and our fellow Christians live together here. Jerusalem has the Church of Holy Sepulchre, and it has Al-Aqsa Mosque. Whoever they want to imprison, let them imprison. Who they want to kill, let them kill. If they want to take a tree, we will plant 1,000. They break and we build. We are here for a long time. We are never going to be bored. They asked me, why do you see Palestine like this? This is my country, and I can draw it as I want and make it more beautiful.
Fatima joined Palestinian and international activists from around the world in building the protest village Bab el-Karama.
They didn't leave their land or houses, and therefore they became refugees in their own homeland. Jerusalem is near, only a few meters from here, so we consider Beit Iksa to be the western gate for Jerusalem. If they take this village, we wouldn't be able to reach Jerusalem. But Jerusalem is our capital, the capital of the Palestinian state. Whether they like it or not, it's ours and not theirs. We are here today because they are going to take this land to build the wall through it, and we do not approve that. It is the land of our fathers and grandfathers, and also the land of our sons and grandchildren.
About 1,200 hectares of from Beit Iksa land, and it just leaves about 2,000 hectares for the city, for the village itself. This is what had happened, and this is what they are looking to do it. The train that passes from near here in this neighborhood was passed from the lands of Beit Iksa, and the Israelis want to keep the citizens here far away from the pass of the train and the wall. That's why they separate the land.
Well, I was at the Bab el-Sham's protest last week, and I myself had my head banged against a bus by a soldier. The bus I was put on to be taken away from Bab el-Sham's, there was a man with he had a busted eye and a bleeding nose, and the soldiers would not let him receive medical attention.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim, Maliki Yawmiddin.
In this day, Al-Jum'ah, they pray here in their land because they know keeping their land is part